Good morning, everyone. It is Friday, December 8th, 2017, and the Green Bay Packers are a couple days away from traveling to Cleveland, Ohio to take on the winless Browns in a game that, you know, probably seemed like perhaps the easiest one on their schedule before the regular season started, and now with Brett Hundley at quarterback and some other injuries that we'll talk about in a little bit, it's not as easy as it once seemed, and I believe the Packers opened as 6-point favorites, and it dropped all the way down to 3.5 last I checked on Thursday. So here to discuss all of that with me is Tom Silverstein on this new episode of the Packers podcast. And Tom, I know that Hundley's going to be the quarterback on Sunday, but all anybody wants to talk about is that guy that wears number 12.
Oh yeah, who's that?
Aaron Rodgers, right?
Oh,
Rodgers.
Okay. Yeah.
So he practiced this week, and your eyes got to see it.
Yeah, he put on a pretty good show at practice. So it was a very controlled drill with no defense, just they call that on air, where receivers are run their routes. It's really more of like a warm-up drill, a fundamentals drill. But you could see the guy was rearing back and throwing. I'm sure he was showing off for the media and anybody else. But he's throwing the ball like he was. I think he's all the way back in terms of his throwing. Whether he's ready to play a game, I don't know. I guess medically that's the big question. And it sure is shaping up like he's going to come back next week. I don't think there was anything wrong with his throws. I know this week, and we don't get to see it, but especially today they were in pads, and I think this was probably his biggest day, where he got to run the scout team and play against the Packers defense, and I'm sure he shredded them like nobody's business, but that's just a cheap shot to the defense. So, I think everything's on pace for him to come back. The only thing we don't know is what his scan will say or whether they've actually made a decision that he can come back now.
Yeah, and so that's really the big elephant in the room is that, you know, his collarbone does not have to be healed to the point that they want it to for him to be able to make these throws against the air in
sure.
practice.
No, absolutely not.
It's a matter of looking at the scan and deciding, okay, is this stable enough to, A, not be still broken and healing, and B, to withstand, you know, whatever hits he may or may not take. Now, I'm sure that if he does play against Carolina, they'll try and get the ball out of his hands quickly, and they'll tell him, you know, try and hold back a little bit on you know, keeping the football and scrambling around and things like that. But he's got to be able to take a shot and not have it, you know, re-break.
Yeah, you cannot say, okay, don't take a hit like this. You know, make sure you avoid a hit like this. That's not realistic.
Exactly.
You have to be ready to take another Anthony Barr type hit. You know, and that might have been a one in a million hit that caused a broken collarbone. But you can't take a hit that you normally would get up from very easily, and you know your collarbone's broken again. So I think that's really what it all comes down to.
Now, obviously, we don't know if they've made any sort of a decision on Rodgers, but do you think there's any chance that maybe they already know? You know, again, just playing devil's advocate here. Do you think there's any chance that they know maybe, for example, he isn't coming back and they've just dangled this in front of the team mm-hmm. as a motivational carrot?
I think that's possible. I think they could, you know, probably do that. Let's face it, they did it at the Pittsburgh game to do a little bit of motivation, and I'm sure it's helped in practice this week. I just think that that would only last a week or two. If he doesn't play next week, you know, then I don't think anyone's motivated by it anymore.
I agree.
So it's a very short-term thing if that's what they're doing.
In terms of the plays that he made in practice, again, it was all against the air, but he looked pretty good. But the thing that you can't confused about it is that Hundley's still taking all the reps that matter.
Yes.
You know, Hundley is still taking all the reps against the scout team defense to get ready for Cleveland.
Well,
as he should, exactly. Now, in terms of what he's going to have around him, one of the things that, you've asked some of the coaches about and we've sort of discussed just, you know, off the microphone is you know, the possibility that they could have Jones and Williams both, you know, capable, both healthy and both able to boost this offense a little bit. So if that comes to fruition, and it certainly seems like it will in terms of both guys being healthy, how do you see that maybe playing out against Cleveland, a team that does have a good run defense?
Well, I think they're going to be used. I think they'll run the ball, try to run the ball 30 times if they can, all totaled, including scrambles and read options and all that kind of thing. I think they'd like to be in the 30s. I wrote earlier in the week that Jamal Williams deserves a medal for everything he's done to carry this team as far as he can. But Aaron Jones is the anointed one. Aaron Jones is the one who can turn a no play into a 20-yard touchdown, game-winning 20-yard touchdown at the drop of a hat. And they have to not forget that you win with explosive players. You win with special players. And Aaron Jones has that feel to him right now. And they can't forget that, and they have to use him against Cleveland. They have to find a way to get him involved.
So does he automatically become the featured back in the way that Jamal Williams has been and the way he was, he being Jones, against Minnesota and Dallas?
I don't think it has to be a feature. I think they'll start out with Williams. I think that would be the smart thing to do, to just kind of pound Williams a little bit and then sprinkle in Jones. Now, one thing they could do is start Jones and then use Williams on third downs because he's such a good blocker. I mean, even third and short, third and three, they can still run it with him.
And he's shown that he can catch out of the backfield.
He can catch out of the backfield. He's good, seems to be good on screens. I could see that being the scenario, that one is that Jones winds up being the first and second down guy and Williams the third down guy.
Do you think that they'll try anything drastic to sort of ignite the passing game at all? I mean, obviously the connection between Hundley and Adams seems to be somewhat consistent week to week, but the fact that, you know, Jordy Nelson can't seem to get the ball and Cobb didn't touch the ball at all last week, I mean, is it as simple as just pound the football because that's our best chance right now, or do they try and invigorate this passing game somehow?
I think they're going to try to pass off the read option. That's my prediction. I don't know anything insider knowledge, but I think you could see that there are opportunities that when Hundley pulls it out, you know, he doesn't give it to the back and starts running, you know, there's going to be times the defensive end is right there and doesn't, you know, go for the fake, and Hundley can get around him and throw. And so I think they're going to have to explore that, throw some slants off it, you know, have Devontae Adams, you know, tight to the tight end and just run some slants. That's what he does really well, fake the handoff and throw a slant. And I wouldn't doubt if we see that quite a bit.
So when I was in college at Syracuse, the last 2 years I was there covering the football team, they went to a ton of zone read with a quarterback who couldn't run at all. It was Ryan Nassib.
Mm-hmm.
But the reason they did it was because of the threat to hand it off or pass it, like you said. And their offensive coordinator, I remember there was an article on the MMQB that looked at how this read option was becoming so popular. And one of the plays that a lot of teams have adopted was something that Syracuse ran, and it was called this pop pass to the tight end. And mm-hmm. they did it once against, I can't remember if it was Tampa Bay or the Steelers, but essentially you fake the zone read handoff, and instead of giving it to the running back and instead of running it yourself, the quarterback just throws a really quick, it's not a vertical route because it's short, but it's straight up the field by the tight mm-hmm. end because he's closest to the line of scrimmage.
Yeah, you have to have a certain coverage to get that.
Exactly.
And you can't have a linebacker right up in his face.
Right.
You have to have sort of a cover two look, and that is what Cleveland will do quite a bit, is play some Tampa too.
And they hit that once with Kendricks or Richard Rodgers, either against the Steelers or the Bucks. I can't remember, but
I think it was the Steelers.
Okay, and it was one play that I said, oh wow, maybe that's something they could try and do. Maybe, you know, not 10 times a game, but maybe 2-3 times a game.
Yeah, I believe it was a blitz too.
Okay.
I'd have to go back and look, but I think Pittsburgh's linebackers blitzed. The thing with Cleveland is if they're in true cover two, those middle linebackers drop. They
Correct.
Drop heavy, you know, far. So, you know, yeah, that might be a play. Of course, if you're faking the handoff, they're not going to drop. They're going to bite. That's what you're trying to do. You're trying to get the linebackers to come up. So, I don't. Yeah. It's the same concept as throwing slants.
Yep.
And I think we'll see a variety of those things. I don't think they'll run a ton of read option, but I think they will run it.
So the offensive side of the ball, in terms of injuries, I'm looking at the injury report here. It's essentially a clean bill of health for this offense.
Yeah.
nothing on the offensive line, nothing at any of the skill groups, but it's the defensive side of the ball where there seem to be some legitimate concerns, particularly at the cornerback position. So Kevin King, of course, was placed on injured reserve, and let's start there. Were you surprised by that, and how big of a loss is that for this defense?
I was surprised. I know you mentioned it after the game against Tampa Bay, that would we one day, you know, wake up and Kevin King was going on IR, and that was a good call. I thought they would try to play him through it if they could. But obviously, you know, there's no question that they felt like do the surgery now, give him the most amount of time to come back for next year so that he can maybe go through off-season workouts. Or at least be ready for training camp. So I don't think it was a bad decision. He couldn't. He was really a one-armed man, and it was the right decision, I think.
I wonder if this move is the first, even just the tiniest admission that the playoffs are not likely. Because if they're, let's say they're, I don't know, let's say they're 7-5 right now, or 8-4, and they're going to the playoffs. Do you put Kevin King on IR in that situation? Because I don't know that you do.
Yeah, I think you do.
Really?
I think that decision, if he could play, I think they would play him.
Okay.
But I think it's just a situation now where he's got to have that surgery.
I guess the reason I thought that is because everyone makes it sound like the situation has not necessarily gotten a whole lot worse over the last 4 weeks. It's just it hasn't gotten better. And so I don't.
Well, like I think it has gotten worse because he hasn't played. You know, so they held him out of this game. If it was not, if it was just as bad as it had been in, you know, at the start of the Pittsburgh game, he would have played on Sunday, you know. I don't think there ever was a possibility that it would be, you know, catastrophic, but that at some point it just was diminishing returns.
So without him, you know, of course you'd be looking at Demaryius Randall and Devon House, but now there's a shoulder injury for House, and he has not discussed it at all this week, to my knowledge. He didn't talk to the media.
No, did not.
And after the game against the Bucks, he sort of intimated that it might be a significant injury or at least a little bit serious. So, I mean, I guess right now, do you think he's going to play Sunday?
If I had to guess, I would say no.
Me too.
He's still got a couple days, you know. It may just be a contusion, the way he landed. It could be, could have been an AC joint or something like that. But I think I would be surprised if he played. And if he does play, I don't know if he would last the whole game or whether he would be very effective. So if he does play, I'll be keeping an eye on him for sure.
So the dark, slippery slope that could be reality if he doesn't go is that, boy, you're starting to really get down into the depth of this cornerback group that has a lot of guys in terms of the number of players on the 53-man roster, but really a lot of inexperience. You know, Demaryius Randall becomes essentially your bona fide number one, and you could probably argue that he might have been playing more consistently than House was anyway
the last four weeks. 4 weeks he's been the best corner, no question about it.
So opposite him would be Josh Hawkins, a guy who they've shied away from playing at times recently and preferred to use a safety in their sub packages rather than shifting Randall inside and playing Hawkins outside. And then in the nickel and dime, you'd have Morgan Burnett and Jermaine Whitehead. So what combination do you think you'll see?
Well, first, let's look at the Tampa Bay game and why Josh Hawkins didn't play. I actually don't think they're down on Josh Hawkins, but I think they wanted to match up Randall on DeSean Jackson and House on Mike Evans. And with that being the case, Josh Hawkins can't play in the slot.
True.
So he was, you know, because DeSean Jackson was playing mostly outside, and same with Evans, Hawkins would have had to play in the slot, and that just didn't work out. That's why they used Whitehead and Burnett. Burnett was the nickel and Whitehead was the dime. So if I were a betting man and House was out on Sunday, I would say that Randall will follow Josh Gordon.
Really?
But only when he's outside. When he's inside, then Randall will go. Randall will go into the slot. No, I take that back. I think Randall will follow him when he's in the slot. And then they go Hawkins and Randall on the inside. Wait, let me revise this again. Okay, my original
thought
was, yeah. Okay, so Randall will follow Gordon, except when he's in the slot. When he's in the slot, Morgan Burnett will take him, more than likely with help, you know, with the safety over the top. So that way...
So essentially Randall plays outside the whole game?
Yeah, right, because they don't want Morgan Burnett playing outside.
Right.
My original thought it was that way Burnett stays in the slot and Randall can follow side to side with Gordon.
Okay.
And then they don't ever have to play Randall outside Burnett outside, which he can't do.
So you covered Sam Shields a lot longer than I did. Mm-hmm. And one of the things that before I started covering football, I would always look at, you know, height and the height disparities between receivers and corners. And maybe that's because I spent more time covering basketball where you look at those things more, especially in man-to-man defense and stuff. But, I mean, you look at Josh Gordon, and they list him at 6'3", 225. And then you look at Demarius Randall, and he's 5'11", under 200 pounds. Mm-hmm. And so the first thing that comes into my head is, well, why would you want to match those guys up? But I get the sense, and again, the reason I brought up Shields is because he was such a slender guy and tracked number ones a lot. Does it not matter as much in terms of the receiver cornerback thing as it maybe it does in some other sports?
Well, first with Shields, Shields was deceptively strong, really strong hands at the line of scrimmage. He also, of course, had blinding speed, you know, as a 4.35, 4.38 guy. The other thing is he had incredibly long arms, and he was actually able to shadow Calvin Johnson. Mm-hmm. And so that's what made him able to do that kind of stuff. Randall is just going to have to beat Gordon based on really good coverage and help. You know, they're going to give help to Gordon. They don't have to worry about Corey Coleman all that much. I think...
Especially because Hawkins would have the speed to run with him.
Yeah.
Pure speed-wise.
Right, exactly. Now, they do have to worry about the tight end who's been kind of hot lately, or at least has come alive. But Randall just has to win those downs with his technique. He's not going to be able to rough up Josh Gordon at the line of scrimmage.
No chance.
I saw Casey Hayward. I watched that game, and Casey Hayward, and the Chargers do this mostly, is play off. They play off. They play a lot of zone. And the one time Casey Hayward went up to press Gordon, you know, he just pressed him with his feet, as Joe Whitlett likes to say. He got scorched. I mean, Gordon just ran a post route for like 30 yards. So you have to be really careful about how often you're going to jam him. And Randall, you know, Randall's a decent matchup for him. He's going to need help, but, you know, his technique, when he's using his proper technique, he can get on a guy pretty well.
This matchup, if that comes to fruition, the one thing that would really jump out to me as being something to watch is whether or not Randall is willing to play physical with a guy like that. Mm-hmm. Because Gordon, of course, has the attributes and the traits that you mentioned to rough him up if it becomes, you know, a real physical tangle. And there's been times earlier in his career, even earlier this season, where Randall has not necessarily embraced the physical side of the game in that manner. And so I wonder if he's getting pushed around, or if he ends up on the ground, or if he gets bumped, things like that, if that's the type of thing that would test his moxie a little bit.
Well, he would be – it would not be smart for him to get physical with Gordon at
exactly.
the line a lot. At times you have to get up at the line depending on what the defensive call is. If it's a blitz, you know, an all-out blitz, you got to get up there and jam that guy. I think that Randall will mix it up, but I think you'll see him playing off quite a bit.
How do you see the rest of the secondary shaping up? Obviously, Clinton Dix plays one safety, but with Njoku being able to run the way that he can, the tight end, I wonder if it's the type of game where it makes more sense to play Josh Jones at that inside linebacker spot than it does at safety, or if you put him back at safety, then you're talking about Jake Ryan, and maybe there's some matchup issues there in mm-hmm. coverage. How do you see that playing out? And I guess what I'm getting at is, does Marwin Evans get onto the field?
I don't think so. I think Jermaine Whitehead will continue to be their fourth safety. And I think what you'll probably see is Burnett will cover either the slot, or he'll be over the tight end, sort of like he does when he's playing linebacker, mm-hmm. you know. And then they just cover the slot receiver with the safety and you know, drop somebody into coverage. It's pretty common.
So sort of like what they did against Dallas, where he took Witten essentially the whole game?
Well, not necessarily, because there's times he is going to have to take a slot receiver.
Okay.
And then they'll have to cover the tight end with Martinez or with
gotcha.
Clinton Dix or someone. Or Jones, it really depends on how they play deep. You know, what their scheme is. Are they going to play zone most of the day? Are they going to continue to play man like they usually do? I don't know. I kind of think that playing zone is not a bad idea against Kaiser. I think it sets you up for some interceptions. So we'll see.
In terms of the rest of the defense, again, going through the injury report, guys that did not play, Dimitri Goodson, I get the sense that he's probably not going to be available this weekend.
And if he is, he's just going to be on special teams.
Okay, then the one big concern, if you're a Packers fan, would be this Nick Perry situation.
Mm-hmm.
The fact that, you know, he had a foot injury the last couple of weeks and was on the injury report, but obviously was able to play. He has since been added to the injury report after the Bucs game with a shoulder injury, didn't practice Wednesday, didn't practice Thursday. I haven't talked to Perry or anything like that, but not a great sign.
One of the signs that I think that he may play is that he's been around and he's been doing cardio and not really doing a whole lot of rehab. I think, you know, maybe this is just, okay, they want to lay off it for the week and see. I've been wrong, and that could be, you know, we've certainly got here on Sunday, and all of a sudden, you know, the guy, whatever guy it is inactive, and you're like, wow, I sure thought he was going to play. So I don't think we really know with Perry. I can only judge on what I saw, him walking through the locker room, him riding the bike at the side at practice. It didn't look like he was terribly injured, but you never know.
So a huge question mark is whether or not the Packers pass rush can replicate the performance that it had against Tampa Bay, a team that was that had some holes on the offensive line, put some guys on IR. And this week against Cleveland, I would say it's probably a better O-line than what they faced against Tampa, but certainly not one of the better O-lines in the league. They've got issues at left tackle with Joe Thomas, of course, being on IR with a tricep, was it, or bicep?
I think it was a bicep.
Bicep. Okay, so they've got Spencer Drango, who played at Baylor and was projected more as a guard out at left tackle. And then, of course, the familiar face in the middle of the line is J.C. Tretter, the ex-Packer who left in free agency. They spent a lot of money at right guard on Kevin Zeitler. And their right tackle, what is it?
Zeitler,
I'm sorry. And then their right tackle, Sean Coleman, some of you may know, he was the player at Auburn that had cancer and came back from that. So what do you think?
And Betonio is really good. Their guard, their interior is very good.
Yeah.
This is going to be a matchup, really good matchup between Mike Daniels, Kenny Clark, and those three guys inside. That's the strength of their offensive line.
So what do you think about the pass rush trying to carry over what it did against Tampa?
I think there's plenty to be made here. You know, Cleveland's given up a lot of sacks this year. I forget. I think they're like third most, something like that, in the NFL. So there absolutely is room for them to make that happen. I just they can't get think that they're going to come easy, because they were easy against Tampa Bay.
Yes.
And they're not going to be as easy this week. And then they're really not going to be easy the next week or the next week or the week after that.
So one of the things that I've just sort of been pondering this week, as you know, somebody, again, who's never played football, never obviously been at the professional level, but I just wonder if this is the type of game where there could be anxiousness, or the Packers come out tight or hesitant, because for so long they've waited and waited and waited and said, okay, we just got to get to when Rodgers comes back. And now they're in a position where they basically have to win this game if Rodgers coming back is going to have any chance of meaning anything. And so all the pressure comes onto Sunday against a team that has no pressure on it whatsoever, on the road, a team that's not very good with the exception of its defense. Do you buy into that at all, that this is a potentially tricky game from a mental anxiety kind of standpoint?
I think it's a tricky game, but I see it actually the opposite. I think the Packers will come out, and I think they'll play really well to start, and I think they'll jump out to a lead. And then, you know, Cleveland, sort of their MO this year, takes them a while to get going, and then they kind of put up a rally in the fourth quarter and try to make it close. And I think that's what's going to happen. And I think it's going to be a test of whether the defense can hold it together. And after playing all these snaps, and if Cleveland, you know, is all of a sudden going 2 minute and moving the ball, you know, whether they can hold up and not lose it. So that's sort of the I don't think psychologically is a issue, except that I think they want to come out fast, and they're going to hit them, you know, probably try to hit them with some big plays right away. And if they do get out to a lead, you know, the thing to watch is how do they play it after that? Do they go for the jugular and try to just keep pouring it on, or do they get conservative and just run it? And then all of a sudden in the fourth quarter, Cleveland starts making a run.
How big of a deal is it, do you think, that the snap counts in recent weeks have been so imbalanced between offense and defense, and that the defense has been on the field? Again, I don't have the numbers in front of me, but I would guess probably 100 more snaps than the defense in the last 3 weeks?
Maybe
so a little
less.
They
had 74 in two straight weeks, with the offense having about 55. So that's
20. Okay, so maybe 60 more snaps over the course of 3 weeks.
Something like that. Yeah, no, that's a huge difference. That defense is, you know, those snaps take their toll this late in the season, and you need a game where you only have 55 snaps, you know? And Your offense is so far ahead that you can play some backups and rest some guys. So they need that kind of game this week.
In terms of specific matchups, is there anything else that we haven't touched on that sort of jumps out to you? I know there's some injuries on the Cleveland side of things that could make things interesting. Their slot corner, Body Calhoun, has not practiced at all this week. One of their starting safeties, Jabril Preppers, has not practiced at all this week. And one of their interior D linemen, Danny Shelton, has not practiced at all this week. But is there anything else matchup-wise that you think is interesting?
Well, for one, you know, Myles Garrett is going to be a key person in Packers protection.
He's going to go against Bakhtiari probably all game,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, and the Packers are really lucky that they have a guy like Bakhtiari who could just take Myles Garrett on his own. You know, there's a lot of teams that can't do that. I think that'll be a big advantage for them. But I do think it's going to be kind of hard. They're going to have to really play well up front to get the run game going. I think you know, it'll be kind of fun to watch Joe Schobert and see. I think they're like mirror images, him and Blake Martinez. You know, I think they're exactly the same type players, and you love watching guys like that play. They just, you know, they leave it all out on the field, and they play, you know, as though their socks are on fire. So
they're tied for second and fourth in the league in tackles.
Yeah. So very similar players. That'll be kind of fun to watch. But I am also eager to see whether how much McCarthy throws the ball and how much confidence he has in Hundley.
The one matchup that I'm very intrigued with is how the Packers try and defend Duke Johnson, the receiving tailback for the Browns. Mm-hmm. This is a guy that had 53 catches a year ago, has 52 catches now, and the only Packers player with more than that is Davante Adams. Mm-hmm. They're not going for big gains a lot of the times. He's only averaging 8.8 a catch. But he's got 456 yards, which again would rank second, 7 yards behind second on the Packers. Mm-hmm. And so the reason I bring this up is because there have been times, most recently against Pittsburgh, where the Packers have struggled against receiving tailbacks. I know Le'Veon Bell is a different animal, but I mean, they also had some issues with Theo Riddick earlier this year. How do you sort of see that playing out? A guy that is such a big threat.
Charles Sims, they had a problem on it last
very true.
Week. I think. Once again, they got to be able to defend the screen. I think that's the most important thing. And if they haven't been working on that all week, then shame on them, because they certainly – that is a big weakness of theirs right now. And that doesn't come down to one person. It comes down to your corners being in the right position. It comes down to your linemen reading the keys. It comes down to your linebackers playing with leverage. So – it's kind of a team thing, and they're going to have to defend that, because they are going to throw screens to Duke Johnson. You can count on that.
Anything else you want to touch on before we make our predictions here?
No, I think that's about it.
All right. So who are you taking this week, Tom?
This is a tough one. I've gone back and forth, but I do think Green Bay will pull it out. I'm going to say it's going to be 27-24.
So you think they can put up some points on this defense?
Yeah, I do. I don't think they can put up a lot. They might score, you know, never know if they'll put up a defensive touchdown. But I just, the way they're running the ball, I think they can run that against almost anybody except, you know, maybe the very best defenses in the NFL, you know, Minnesota maybe, but I think they can make some hay against Cleveland.
I'm taking the Packers as well, and our scores were pretty similar. I'm taking them 23-17. I think that they can score, like I said, and I think that Cleveland will be able to move the ball here and there. But I think that Kaiser, you know, I saw this stat. In an article written by our old colleague Bob McGinn, that he has 20 turnovers by himself, which is more than like 20 teams in the league have total or something like that. Mm-hmm. And I just think there's going to be a chance or two, or maybe Demaryius Randle gets his hands on one, or Blake Martinez forces a fumble, something.
There's going to be interception opportunities.
For both teams.
He throws them up. Yeah, that's true. Yeah.
So I think the Packers will get it done, and then it'll be on to the drama of Aaron Rodgers next week.
Yep, going to be full-time drama.
Pump the live blog?
Yes, come to the live blog. We had really good attendance last week, even though it was just a Tampa Bay game. And I know this is just the Cleveland Browns, but there's a lot on the line. So I'll be there early and ready for your questions.
So be sure to check out PackersNews.com and JSOnline.com for all of the coverage between now and then leading up to Sunday's game. We thank you, as always, for tuning into this podcast. Hope you guys have a nice weekend, and we will talk to you soon. It's too late to change.